My guest today is my friend Greg Whitehead. He is the owner and the founder of the NAH Outpost, this really cool Etsy shop started as a really cool passion. Him just kind of 3D printing some crocheted pins and eventually led to him printing D&D miniatures. The whole 3D printing kind of really leaned into his love of Dungeons and Dragons. And now Greg is able to hit up all these different conventions and sell his miniature figurines. They're all high definition and they are all top notch. I mean, the details on some of these are unbelievable. He credits a lot of that detail that comes from his 3D printers, that actual resin material. Since you switch to resin, it changed the game on his product. Not only can he do miniatures, but he can also do etchings on slate coasters and all types of wood. He's got D&D dice boxes. He's got all these cool things on his website. You'll have to check them out. I'm going to put the links in the show description below. Make sure you show NAH Outpost some love. If you are watching this on YouTube, do me a favor, hit that subscribe button, hit the like, and leave a comment. Let me know your favorite part of the podcast. These are all free things that you can do that can help the podcast grow to a new audience. Very excited to welcome Greg on because he's worked with us before on supporting us on a lot of our Dungeons and Donations events, and he is a great human being. It was cool learning how his passion led him into creating one of the coolest, most interesting businesses I've heard. So without further ado, here is my friend Greg. You brought a mini box too.
I did bring a mini box.
That's amazing. I got into painting miniatures around the time that we first introduced each other. Mm-hmm. We first met each other, which was at Retro Game Con.
Yeah.
Right, like a year, two
it
years
year,
ago.
It was a year or two. Yeah, we've been going to Retro Game Con for two years now, maybe three. I'm trying to remember the exact time frame because time gets lost.
Yeah. Do you? Do like a lot of these trade shows and stuff?
I've been doing a lot more recently, not really out of the area.
Right.
Because of my primary job as a... Are we recording everything or...
Yeah, we're good. Should I not?
No, I wasn't sure. No, I'm perfectly fine. I just want to make sure I didn't know if you were doing like an introduction.
And...
Like go. my primary job is a 911 dispatcher for Onondaga County.
Oh, wow.
So, it takes up, obviously a lot of my time.
Yeah. And probably your shifts are like all over the place too.
It's not all over the place, but it sounds horrible, but it's 3 a.m. to 3 p.m. is my shift.
Whoa.
So I get up for work at like 2 a.m.
Yeah.
But so my sleep's all kind of wonky.
Right.
And I play games like World of Warcraft at night with my friends.
Yeah.
It's my sleep schedule bounces all over the place. Last night, I woke up at yesterday. I woke up at 2 a.m. and then went to sleep. And then, I went to work for 12 hours, came home, attended a funeral for a friend of mine, and then we played World of Warcraft until like 2 a.m. just doing some dungeons and stuff. So
yeah, because your sleep schedule, right?
Yeah, because now I'm off for the next few days, so it's just all over the place.
Yeah.
But usually I'll go to bed at like 8 p.m. when I put my kids to bed.
That's cool. I didn't know you were balancing like a full-time job, and what is the name of your company?
NAH Outpost.
Okay.
Originally, when we first started the company way back when, this was pre-COVID, I want to say 2019, I think of October 2019, we started by doing, I wanted to get a 3D printer, so we'll back up even a touch farther than that.
I
was going to take a step back. Now I need to take a step further back
for
my love of Dungeons and Dragons.
Yeah.
So my love for Dungeons and Dragons started back in probably 2017, somewhere around there, where I was, my friends had played without me Dungeons and Dragons a little bit. They touched on it like on 3.5 way back when, and I still had no idea what it was back then. I didn't join them on their session. And my friend was the dungeon master, and apparently he got them into this like petrifying puzzle where they got confused. They had no idea what to do. And then they're like, they just stopped playing. They didn't really do anything.
Oh, they just stopped.
They just stopped playing
from a puzzle.
So,
yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So they didn't, because they got confused or anything.
Yeah.
But and then pick it up like a few years later. I was scrolling around on Twitch just because, you know, Twitch was back then. That was when Twitch was in its prime, pun intended.
Yeah. Right.
You
could watch people play, right?
Yeah, exactly. Well, actually, just to play video games, just standard video games. And then I saw like Dungeons and Dragons was trending with like 80,000 people watching. I'm like, what the hell is going on?
Wow.
And then that's when I discovered Critical Role.
Right.
And it was one of the prime moments of when Scanlan had died, when they were dealing with the Green Dragon. And the intensity of the voice actors.
Yeah.
And how just intense it was. I was just sucked right into it. I was like, wow, this is like crazy. What's going on?
So you had
right now?
Touched on it before in your past briefly.
I've been playing World of Warcraft since like the alpha of the original game back in 2003. So I already have, you know, my love of like fantasy to begin with.
Yeah.
And you know, even going before that, like I originally played the original like Warcraft and Warcraft 2.
Yeah, Warcraft 2. I remember being younger and playing with my dad in
the original Battle.net edition and everything. Yeah. So I've always loved the fantasy realm to begin with.
So it made sense coming into Dungeons and Dragons.
Yes.
And now you're watching Critical Role, which is like
Critical
top
Role,
tier.
Like, I was like top tier. Yeah, exactly. Just like completely amped up for it. And I'm like, wow, this is really cool. I'd love to be able to do something like this. And that's when I started looking into how to play Dungeons and Dragons and being the Dungeon Master, and we decided to run the Lost Mines of Fendelver.
Nice. So that was your intro? That was my intro, too.
My very first intro.
I played with friends before, like, and before I got paired up with Mike and Dennis, I played with Mike with a group of friends, but we were never consistent.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what it was, but when I was playing at the time, it just didn't, like, totally click for me.
Yeah.
But when I started playing, maybe it was because it was a smaller group, it just felt like a way different game. I was more sucked in.
Yeah.
And we started on Fendelver too. Mm-hmm. Lost Mines of Fendelver.
I had no idea what it was. Like, cause I jumped into the Dungeon Master. It was my wife was away, visiting some family in Massachusetts. And I'm like, all right, guys, it's my birthday. Come on over. We're going to do some Dungeons and Dragons. We're going to try to figure this out. And like the very first the goblin battle where the four goblins ambush you with the horses and everything.
Yeah.
We're like, all right, combat starting. How do we combat? I don't really know. We're trying to figure it out. We're like,
you figured it out on the fly.
Yeah, we actually watched a YouTube video to try and fully understand. Because, I was my first time dungeon mastering and really playing Dungeons & Dragons for the most part.
Right.
And we figured it out and we went through the whole process and, you know, we got into the Craigmaw Cave for the first part. And it was, that just kind of sucked us right into it. And that launched us in. And so when we started playing more games, like, okay, let's play this. I want to have some more. I want to do miniatures. So I started like looking online. There was this guy, MZ, I forget his tag, but he created a ton of miniatures, like 3D sculpts for free.
Oh.
And they're pretty rough, basic models, but you were able to have some fun with them. And I'm like, okay, how can I make these? So I decided to go over to the Fayetteville Library, where they had a makerspace set up over there.
Oh.
And they actually had 3D printers that you could use.
Whoa.
And you could actually, like, you'd have to load up the file. You'd have to figure out. There was
the
a
calibrations.
Lot of, there was a and... whole, yeah, there's a, that was getting into a whole nother realm of stuff that I wasn't prepared for. And calibrating their printers and trying to figure out the settings and making my own little miniatures. And man, these I should have brought some of the miniatures. Oh my God, I should have brought one today. It was so rough and horrible, but it was
not
fantastic.
The stuff that you have today.
Nothing, because these are resin.
Right.
But that it was just basic PLA plastic, like extrusion. And it was a very rough, like hobgoblins and the heroes. But, you know, to us, it was fantastic. It was because it was the first thing.
And you had little pieces now to play with.
Yep, so exactly. So we're able to, like, have little figurines that represented our characters. And then I'm like, all right, this is cool, but going out to Fayetteville sucks all the time because I live in Mattydale and driving out
there.
Oh,
that's a
drive. That's like a 20-25 minute drive to get out there and then driving back. Paying for the miniatures was nothing. It was like 5 cents per gram or something like that. It was nothing. It was
so cheap.
It was dirt cheap to be able to actually use the miniatures. So eventually
self-taught. That's really cool.
Oh, yeah,
respect.
Everything
that's
was
so
self-taught.
Cool.
And so I decided, I'm like, okay, I convinced my wife. I'm like, hey, I really don't want to go out to Fayetteville anymore. Can I splurge a little bit and get my own little 3D printer? So I did. And I got my own plastic extrusion, which I was able to, with a 3D printer back in the day, you had to modify the machines. You had to do a whole mess of stuff to try and...
You say back in the day. It was like 5 years ago.
Yeah, 5 years ago.
But the technology is so much farther, right?
Oh, exactly.
Yeah, that's wild. That's cool.
Skyrocketed.
That's cool.
Like, to the current PLA printers that are out right now called, like, the Bamboo Labs. It's you take it out of the box, and it's ready to go and create some amazing stuff right now. Still nothing to resin quality. But it's two different styles of 3D printing we can get into a little bit later on. But I was able to create my own miniatures in my own home, which was fun.
Saved you the half hour trip.
Exactly. Saved me the trip. I had one set up in my office. It was a blast to be able to watch it. There was a lot of failures.
Because you have to tweak a lot of those settings.
There's temperature settings. There's the extrusion, the retraction. There's literally dozens and dozens of different settings that can just completely screw up an entire print. So I wanted to create miniatures that I was really proud of. I wanted to use for my own table. Yeah. Like I was like really proud of them. Like, all right. And after a while, I was like, I'd really love to dip into the resin printing, because resin printing is like the creme
way
de la creme.
Smoother.
It's so because with a PLA printer, you print it like on average either a 0.2 or 0.4 millimeter layer height.
So like one, it's you like always see a layer, right?
Yeah, you see a layer. It's very, 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 very small. But compared to resin is 0.05 or point. I print in 0.04 millimeters. So it's literally
you get way more detail.
You don't see the layers whatsoever. Mm-hmm. So I decided to do research, and it was a scary research to get into because, again, 4 years ago, it wasn't not common knowledge or anything like that.
Right.
Because you're dealing with
it was a newer hobby.
You're dealing with UV printed resin where, you know, you can end up burning yourself. There's chemicals that you're dealing with. You need to wear gloves, protection, a lot of different stuff, the alcohol to clean them.
Right.
You're delving into a whole different realm. But I said, screw it. I jumped right into it.
Were you running the campaign, the Fandelverse?
Yeah, I was. Yep, the whole time doing this. So I was.
Dude, I love your approach that you're just like, I want to learn how to play Dungeons & Dragons. I'm going to YouTube a combat fight.
Exactly.
I want to print out minis. I bet you YouTube those videos too on how to 3D print stuff.
Everything.
Yeah, of course.
I was doing research galore just stuff because this wasn't something common knowledge or anything that was used back then.
Right.
So we, I just ended up wanted to expand more. I wanted to, so with the resin miniatures, I created, I finally got my own resin printer, my first resin printer. And that was a whole nother territory, which there was a lot less to mess around with as far as settings go. So it was actually in a realm easier to deal with. There were different settings you need to set up. You need temperature, exposure time, layer heights. There's a whole bunch of different other settings you had to mess with. So it was a similar realm, but different than a extrusion PLA printer. But I was able to then start printing our own miniatures in much higher quality. And then we ended up going on to like Hero Forge, which is where a site where you can make your own miniatures. And then around that time was when they were like, yeah, you can actually create an STL. STLs are the files for models. So you could just buy them for like a half price for like
And print $5. Them there.
And then I was able to get my own, the only file, dude, and then print them ourselves.
Don't you just love the future? This is amazing that you could do this.
I could go. It's just, I'm so excited.
It's so crazy that you can just do that. I had a guy that I was working for, and when he went to go sell his house, there was a piece in his dishwasher that was broken. And he said, I haven't used my dishwasher in like 2 months because there's a part that's in there that is broken, and I can't get it fixed. I can't order it anywhere. And I go, well, what are you going to do? Are you going to replace the dishwasher? He goes, no, I think I'm just going to print the part. And I'm like, print the part? He goes, yeah, I have really strong PLA material.
Yep.
So he was able to print like this really complicated machinery part and 3D designed it all in like, I'm like, how did you? That's so impressive that we can do that.
I've not gotten into the 3D designing myself because that's, I got enough on my plate.
It's
got
to be another,
that's a whole other skill set. But people are able to do that. And I still do that to this day. Like because there's a ton of other people that have thought the same thing and have had to create parts, and then they've made it publicly available, and then I'm able to print whatever I need to for parts for miscellaneous things like a fan.
Right.
Or I 3D printed a wall mount for my monitor the other day.
That's
just
awesome.
Crazy.
So what your one little passion or hobby, right? Dungeons and Dragons led you into printing, which then led you into like, oh man, I should run this as like a business now.
So obviously with, I started getting Patreon, I ended up kind of subscribing to a lot of different model creators. That was the start of their realm where people were like, because you get all these people out in the world that were the video game designers and such where it was hard for them to get jobs. Well, some of them are like, I'm really good at making models. What if I just, you know, make them publicly available? So he had all these people that still to this day create some really badass models that you can subscribe to them and you end up getting their models. Like they put out like a whole entire set of models. There's one that I started with specifically called Artisans Guild that would put out a series of like four. Like, for example, like their third set was Orc Barbarians, where there was four warriors, there was a female, like, sorcerer, There was a male, like Grom Hellscream style, like, badass barbarian. And they also did, like, a pinup model, too, that was, you know, for the, you know, the ones that like the pinup models.
Right.
And
they were just like a set?
It was an entire set. You get the STLs, yeah. And you could just use them for yourself, and you print them, and you do whatever you want with them. It's a lot of fun. And that was actually... So the first thing we actually started doing for our business to try and make some money off of the 3D printers, because we're like, okay, this is cool, but it'd be kind of cool if we could make some money off of it. So my wife decided that she's big into crochet and such. So we actually started, you know, we didn't even start with the business with miniatures. We actually did, stitch markers where you would, for like crochet and such, like, I guess you use like little markers to mark your placings and such. So I ended up making these little like 3D printed markers that had like different, they were like, Hogwarts, class insignias on them, or different Pokemon, a whole bunch of different little images, basically.
Oh, that's cool.
That were just printed right into it. And we would like paint them by hand and attach the actual, markings to it. And that's how our business started. We sold like for like five markers for like $10. It was simple. Yeah. And my wife's like, well, why don't you try like selling like some of your models? And like, do you think that would be a thing? Like, I don't know if that would actually be a thing or not. And this was back when, like, not very many people did it at all whatsoever. And I'm like, because going back on my pride of Dungeons & Dragons, I wanted to make miniatures as best I could. That's why I went from the PLA to the resin. I wanted to have, like, the most perfect models. I wanted to make them as badass as possible for my own table, for my enjoyment, my players' enjoyment. And so I took that pride, and my wife was like, well, why don't you try selling some miniatures? Okay, cool. I'll put up some listings on Etsy. Etsy was where we started our site back in 2019.
So you started in 2019
on
launched
Etsy
on Etsy. Mm-hmm. And what was it like? Was it mostly the crochet markers?
It was mostly the crochet markers from like October to December of 2019. And then we started, then like in January, I decided to post up our first miniatures, which was that Orcs Barbarian set that I talked about. And I still remember to this day, the very first model it sold probably like a week or two into, us putting them up was that pinup orc barbarian that has like, it's like a half nude, female orc, that's like hanging out
onto
an axe. It was the very first model that we sold.
Oh,
I just remember that it was the very first model, and I got like, super, I'm like, oh, okay, cool. I got my first sale.
Yeah.
Put it up, printed it, printed it to order. And sent it out, and we got a great review, and then
it just steamrolled
into that, and then I'm like, okay.
And then I feel like D&D really blew up during COVID too, so like this combined effect, because
Critical Role was getting rolling at that time too, exactly. Like really hard at that point. And that's when, you know, just prior to COVID hitting, because COVID was 2020,
in
March, April, somewhere in that area. And by that point, I had been posting up more and more models.
Right.
I had subscribed to more artists that... another one that I did was Rocket Pig Games, which really specializes in monsters and such. And we were able to just build up our selection of listings on Etsy. And we just went crazy. And we started getting a ton of orders. People were... And
now, I would imagine when you first went on Etsy, you had like... one printer.
Mm-hmm.
How did you scale the business, and when did you know it was time to get like another printer?
Because I was getting I needed to make sure at one point when we were getting consistent orders and I was like printing constantly nonstop, I'm like, okay, I need to get another printer. And then I had a printer break down, and I'm like, oh god,
Because that happened, then the orders would have been backed up.
Issues happen, and I get orders backed up, so I'm like, okay, now I need to make sure I have redundancy to make sure.
Right.
And back then, printers were quite a bit more expensive. They were like $600-$800 a printer. But it was a dive that we chose to go into. And we decided that we just needed to scale up more to be able, and so right now, it's kind of rolling up to the point now where we have about 1,500 miniatures in our shop right now. There's different variations. There's small, medium, large, huge monsters. There's gargantuan, along with Artisan's Guild that has all different types of variations of the different models with holding different weapons and such. We have probably about 6,000 different variations.
Yeah, I was telling you before I ordered, these are one of your mystery boxes that you have online where it's six miniatures?
You get about 5 to 6 medium-sized miniatures. Yeah, because some of the, of the medium-sized miniatures, some of them are like kind of smaller, smaller creatures, like smaller,
I got a little hellhound in one of them.
Like a little hellhound.
But I was telling you, no doubles in any of them. And I bought the big pack, and then the time before, the RetroCon before I met you, I bought 2 boxes, so I had a total of however many that adds up to be, and not a single double. They're all different.
When we do our mystery miniature boxes, we run off a print of about 600 different miniatures. All different, all individuals. There's no duplicates whatsoever.
Wow.
And then I box them up. I go through every single box and I piece them together. I want to make sure there's one like super badass model, and then there's a bunch of like just really nice, great models.
Yeah.
And sometimes there's like a smaller model, so I'm like, okay, let's toss in another smaller model that way. Yeah. And that's how you get like the 5 to 6. We want to make sure that every box is just amazing because
they're really high quality. I'll throw up some pictures too of the ones that I have at my house. So if you're listening, watch the actual video because I'll put it up somewhere here where I'll show some detailed pictures of the prints that you guys did.
That's awesome.
So this way people can kind of like see the quality. And I think even then, even if you're watching, I don't know if you'll totally be able to appreciate the level of detail as you having it in front of your face.
It's like I said, we wanted to make sure that I wanted to make sure that the miniatures that I was selling was something that I wanted to have at my own table. I wanted to make sure that it was so high quality, high detailed.
And are you big into like painting miniatures?
I wish I was. Yeah. I have an entire painting area and I love painting miniatures. It's just the time between my full time job.
A 12-hour shift all the time to running a second business or your side business and trying to find time to play D&D
and my 2 kids, my 3-year-old and my 7-year-old. Yep, so
exactly.
It's a lot that I try and bounce around all over the place, but it's
when you look at your business as a whole, what are you the most proud of?
Just the fact that it's very prideful being creating something from nothing, essentially. I've not really had anyone to go to try and create this. So everything is self-taught. I've not really found anything else. I've not gone to school for anything. I don't have an MBA. I don't have anything like that. I have no idea what I'm doing. I'm just kind of flying by the seat of my pants, trying to figure out what to do and the best way to do it. Between like advertising and, scaling it up for just myself.
Are you trying to scale your business right now and make it bigger, or are you happy with where
I'm pretty happy actually where it is. I'm not looking to become a huge thing right now. That's not I don't have those big of ambitions to create like a massive company or anything like that. I'm not looking to become a WizKids or anything like
that.
I'm thrilled with just, you know, I have my wife, I have my 2 kids, and I have a side business that I'm able to supply my love of Dungeons and Dragons for, and be able to just live a great life and have a great time and have a business that's doing phenomenally well.
Has anyone sent you pictures of like the minis totally painted? It's got to blow you away,
right? Especially on our Etsy shop. So, like I said, right now we're selling on Etsy was our primary that we said. Then we added things to our own shop on Shopify, where we have our nahoutpost.com, which is our Shopify website.
Link in the description below if anybody wants to check it out.
Please feel free to check it out. And we have an eBay store, and we're currently exploring onto Amazon right now.
Oh, nice.
And that's basically because a lot of people, if out in the world, if you're not really sure what you... When you you hear like a random website, you're kind of like, I'm not sure if I just want to order from some random website I've never really heard of or anything right. like that. That's why people feel more protected when they go to an Etsy or to, especially an Amazon. You know, what's the first thing you, like, oh, I need a, you know, I need some cleaning supplies or something like that. Okay, I'm going to just go on to Amazon really quick.
Because I feel safer ordering. Okay, exactly. That's interesting. So that's why you have both the, do you see more traffic from Etsy than you do your actual website?
Etsy is, our actual website doesn't see an absolute ton of traffic. It definitely didn't get a lot of people that are coming because we send out little 4x4 pamphlets, like directing people to go to our website, especially after... Because once they get our miniatures, people are just blown away by our miniatures. Yeah. And that's something I'm probably the most prideful of. People love our stuff. They keep coming back to us. Like, especially at the conventions, people buy, like, a single box of miniatures. And then all of a sudden, they come back and they say, yeah, can I get another box? And then, you know, I upsell them a little bit. I'm like, hey, if you buy, you know, three more, I'm going to give you an extra one for free. Because you buy four, get one for free.
Yeah.
We kind of have fun with that. And people just love it. Because...
they're all high quality, that, and they also they paint really well too.
Yeah,
I painted at least I think I'm like three or four. I have so many of them. That's my problem is I'm slowly imagine making my way. Imagine. Yeah, right. I know you probably have them all. Do you have a room in your house just everywhere. Like minis all everywhere. Over everywhere? Yeah,
they're all over the place in my house. But that's one thing that's I've been prideful on is again creating the absolute best miniature I could for myself and my customers. So we've worked over the years from creating different, there's different types of resin you can use, different blends that some people use kind of like a cheaper gray resin that can be a bit brittle. That's one thing with resin is it can be brittle. It can be, It can kind of break a little bit. Right. If you're using like a cheaper resin or depending on what you're doing, like you can like have a staff or something and you can bend it and then it snaps off, which that's really, that really sucks. You don't want that. So we've worked over the years to create the highest detail model miniatures that we can while making sure it has a nice resilience to breakage and bendability to make sure, flexibility to make sure they don't break. Now, I'm not saying like if you drop, one of our miniatures that has like a long staff, if you drop it from like, standing onto the floor, is there a chance it could break? Yeah, it could absolutely break because it's still delicate.
Also, my first interaction with you, I don't remember if you remember this or not, but I was looking at one of your miniatures and I was like, oh my God, dude, it's so detailed. And you were like, yeah, it's actually made of resin and it's a little, it's not as brittle as most resin models. And I went, oh shit. And I dropped it in front of you and I went, oh my God, I'll pay for it. I'm sorry. You were like, no, it's all good. Here, just take another one. Here, get this one instead.
Yeah, it's 'cause they're still delicate.
Yeah, it's hard. You can't make something so tiny, like the handle on some like, staffs or axes, that's only so much you can do. Do you know what I mean?
Now, there's companies out there like WizKids and such that do have stuff that's, it's made from extruded plastic. But the problem with that is you lose so much detail because those are made from just like metal molds that are injected and mass produced, and you don't get the detail.
I wish I had the spider one to show you the level of detail. It's like the spider that has, it's like a caravan spider and it has like bags and it's carrying all this loot and like all things.
Yeah, that's the spider merchant. That's like
when I pulled that out of the box, dude, I was blown away. I don't think you could get that level of detail from just like a print or a plastic extraction.
Yeah, no way.
You could not, like the level of detail, my wife and I were looking at it. We were like, whoa, it's like a tiny gem right here. And then there's like, it's the details, unbelievable.
Because all these modelers, they take great pride in their work too. And they want to make sure they have absolutely the highest quality stuff. And then I'm able to take that and make sure that's replicated and people actually get that. It's just a ton of fun.
Yeah. That's cool. So now you're in a position where you're kind of like cruising. You like where you're at. Mm-hmm. Are you working like a lot of conventions or is it mostly just the retro game con?
We've been doing some conventions recently. Like what's been kind of fun is like, we're not just doing miniatures anymore. We've kind of, especially when we had a lot of extra cash flow from the shop, we were kind of exploring a bunch of different territories. There was one point where I'm like, I have a fun idea. My wife ended up getting a Glowforge laser. Where we were able to do some fun. It was mostly just for my wife to kind of have some fun with.
You got a laser?
Yeah, we got a laser. We have
we bought a laser. Yeah, we bought a
So my thought was this, just to have some fun with, to mess around with. And we decided that I'm like, I had an idea pop in my head. I'm like, okay, well, I already have like customers that love D&D. What if I made like D&D accessories that, you know, things that people would like to get like gifts or such. So that's when I reached out to a couple different artists on Fiverr to have me create images. I wanted to, I had this idea for these slate coasters, and I thought that slate coasters were a fantastic idea for drinking coasters for like people could get for themselves or gifts or whatever.
Yep.
And I'm like, okay, well, I can't just use it. My store is getting bigger now, and it's becoming more noticeable. So I can't use like copyright images because then,
right?
Because then they'll obviously slam you with yep. trademarks and such. So I
hired some artists
to actually create images for each class to represent the Dungeons and Dragons, different classes. Like for barbarian, I got a barbarian shirt on right now. So like with this barbarian shirt, I have
you had somebody design that.
I had someone design all of the images. That's cool. So like you have the barbarian helm with axes and fur and everything with swords. You wanted that rough and rugged look for a barbarian,
right?
I wanted to create an image that really emphasized the core for each class for Dungeons and Dragons. And we were able to, and it took, that was probably like 4 or 5 months it took to do that for all the different classes. And we also did like Artificer and Blood Hunter for those with the expanded, you know, people are, you know, they get mad.
Like, you even have one for like Game Masters too.
Yeah, we do have, we have one for Game Masters too. And we were able to get all these images. Then I started lasering them onto slate coasters and they created this awesome image. And we started selling that, and then I started doing keychains, wood keychains.
The coasters, by the way, are amazing gifts. I got them for Mike and Dennis for Christmas awesome. Gifts.
Yeah. On our websites, we can actually customize those. Actually, you can actually you can put like a character's name underneath.
Nice.
So that's one thing. I for my own parties, for my own games, I get to create our own slate coasters with our character's name underneath the class image and everything.
How many days a week are you playing D&D? Is it like once a week, once every other week?
Not nearly. We're probably like 2 times a month right now. Because unfortunately, life. Still life.
You get 60. How many people do you have and playing together?
Usually 5 or 6 people.
Yeah, that's a lot of schedules to juggle.
A lot of schedules. You know, they have their own families. They have everything they had to do. But it's. I wish I could play more, but you know, that's life.
We with Mike and Dennis, myself, I mean, it's just 3 of us. Mm-hmm. We found a perfect time. It's like Sundays at 8 o'clock. It's after the kids go to bed. Yep. Usually Sunday nights, people don't need much from me. Mm-hmm. So we play every Sunday night. And I think we found that perfect time. And the fact that we are playing on Roll20. Are you guys playing in person?
So most of the time we're playing in person. That's probably the toughest thing.
Because you put in commute time and then you gotta, like, it's a lot. It's a lot, but Roll20 is nice.
If we were just doing it all, especially during the winter months or when COVID was big, we switched to online using both Roll20. Even D&D Beyond has their own system that they have set up right now, which has been actually pretty phenomenal growing.
That's actually how we got introduced was during COVID. Mm-hmm. We didn't see each other. And then Dennis just kind of reached out. He's like, I have all the spare time now, and I would love to play another Dungeons and Dragons campaign. Would you guys be interested? And Mike and I were just like, I don't know. We loved D&D before. I mean, we liked it, but we weren't like in love with, like, we weren't seeking after it. And both of us were like, well, I mean, we're not doing anything. It's COVID. We're in lockdown. And we started playing, and I don't know what it was, but it just clicked. I loved playing it ever since. And now we did Lost Mines of Phandelver. We did, I'm drawing a blank. Oh, Tyranny of the Dragons.
Yep.
Tyranny of the Dragons, that was fun. And we did Curse of Strahd. Mm-hmm. That was really fun. Curse of Strahd was cool. And now we're starting The Witchlight. So we've been able to go through like a couple campaigns while some people, it's like, it's tough to even get consistent with it.
Exactly. Right? Online, definitely doing it online makes it a lot easier. Probably one of, to go back on to the love of Dungeons & Dragons, what really drove me was that I had a whole group, like the same group of friends. I have a whole group of friends that I've been seeing, you know, friends with since high school and such. And we really hadn't, especially during that time, just as life goes on, you start to become more distant from your friends. You don't really see them nearly as much.
Everybody's life gets crazy.
Exactly. The next thing you know, you don't see a friend for like 6 months, which that just sucks.
Yeah.
And you just keep, and then all of a sudden, we had this Dungeons and Dragons where all of a sudden we were able to hang out with each other.
And it gave you a reason.
It gave us a reason to get together. And we started, you know, friends that were once distanced that I didn't speak with, not for any reason. I didn't like him. We just didn't talk for like 6 months just because life.
Life happens.
And then all of a sudden we're like Dungeons and Dragons. All right, this gave us that social reason to get back together, to meet up in person.
Yeah.
And that was, I think, one of the best things about Dungeons and Dragons was that it was able to bring my friends and I back together again as a core group again. And just hanging out and that social structure, being able to just see each other and talk with each other. And especially nowadays, like our Dungeons and Dragons, when we meet up, twice a month or however often it is, we end up just shooting the shit for a good 30 minutes to an hour.
Yeah, before you even play.
Next thing you know, you're like, oh, we were supposed to start at 9 o'clock and here it is 9:30. We should probably start going and get rolling here.
Yeah.
But,
you want to catch up. You want to talk about, it's the same. It's so funny you say that. It happens to us every Sunday. We get like caught up talking about like what's going on, what's going on in each other's life. And then we're like, holy cow, the night is flying by. We got to get through this. You guys playing like a homebrewed campaign
it's funny. We're actually, I'm still DMing right now for our main campaign. Because we had three different campaigns kind of running. We had Lost Mines, which actually I turned into Storm King's Thunder.
Nice.
We're actually still running that right now. Because I don't like going just by the book. I like having some fun with it and exploring and, characters have their own backstories. And all of a sudden, next thing I know, we're going from Storm King's Thunder. We're still doing Storm King's Thunder, technically. But we had these off branches of everyone's different storylines and characters. And I was making different side adventures and quests for everyone. And here we are. We're talking almost 5 years later, and we're...
5 years, one campaign?
5 years, one campaign.
That's cool. That's sweet.
And it's been a blast, and we're... they're actually... I don't know if you're familiar with Storm King's Thunder at all, but they're now approaching the final epic conclusion where they're going to be fighting Emrith, the blue dragon sorcerer.
Oh, shit.
And by the book version, unfortunately, just kind of stinks. It's not that exciting.
Oh, really?
But what's great about the community, again, for Dungeons & Dragons, is that they've found ways to expand on it. How can they make it more epic? Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to talk about it.
No spoiler alert, just in case they're watching.
Exactly,
right?
If they're listening. But I found ways to make...
That's the power of the internet.
It's fantastic.
You know, you can find people who ran the game and made some tweaks and made it better.
And they've made it this epic thing. Like before, it was just... they just found out about this. Where by the book you're going to Emrith's lair where you're just fighting her. She's a she's a blue dragon. She's an ancient blue dragon, super cool. But in our version, I've modified it where she's actually kind of captured one of the storm giant's daughter and is absorbing her I'm trying to think of the word
Her energy?
Yeah, her energy, basically her divinity. There it is, divinity. And she's actually trying to ascend to becoming a great worm, on almost the equivalent level of a Tiamat type situation.
What's really cool is, like, you could take these adventures, tweak them, and essentially, like, create your own kind of thing, and you're using that as, like, a jump off. Mm-hmm. Or you could run it by the book, and I love that, like, there's no... Maybe there's, like, ways you break rules, but there's no, like, wrong way to play.
Yeah.
And if your group played Storm King's Thunder, like, by the book, and then Dennis, Mike, and I played Storm King Thunders, it would be a completely different experience.
Like, I've run Lost Mines probably 3 or 4 times for just a couple different people.
Yeah.
And it's gone completely different ways.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, I love... that's what I think I appreciate about D&D is, like, I like playing the pre-written adventures because I like... When I'm DMing specifically, it's nice to have some guidelines and some rules because I'm not that creative on the fly. But it's nice having like a jump off point if you want to change and wrap up some ideas. You know what I mean? And tweak it your own. Or you can buy, on the DM's Guild, you can buy like a glossary, like an addition to the adventure that adds different missions.
So
you
don't have to. So kind of expanding into the future, the idea of the future for Dungeons & Dragons and just life itself. One thing that I'm, a lot of people are afraid of it, but one thing I'm extremely excited about is AI, artificial intelligence. So what I've found, and I wish I've had this tool for a long time, but I've started using AI for my campaign a bit to help with ideas. Because like you, I'm not that great at, I wish I was better. I mean, between my job, between my business, between my kids, I have very limited brain power as it is to begin with, and that's already kind of stretching it.
Yeah.
And just filling my head with all kinds of useless knowledge to try and expand.
So ChatGPT helped you a little bit with some quests and storylines.
Massively. Massively. Wow. Especially because I wish I was more, you know, I like creating a good story. I love creating a good story for my players, like drawing people in and such. One example, I can, especially ChatGPT, that's the one I use primarily right now. I use Google's Gemini 2 occasionally, but I'm able to, if I'm like in the middle of a campaign and something super crazy happens
out of left field,
I might, you know, slide over while they're talking about what's happening. I might try and talk to ChatGPT to give me some ideas.
Yeah.
And it's... I don't think it's cheating. It's using a tool. It's to help, because right. I'm able to come up with an idea
on the fly quicker.
Yep. With the help. So for example, of something that happened, this last session they were dealing with the last giant in Storm King's Thunder. They were killing off the last giant that was causing problems, which was a cloud giant. And one of the spells that she had was Prismatic Ray, where she hits all the players in a cone and such. One of them is a blinding ray, where they blind, if they fail, they become blind. And if they fail their saving throw again, they become teleported to another plane.
Oh.
And that happened, and I'm like, I wasn't prepared for this. Wasn't prepared for that. And all of a sudden, I'm like, okay. And we're building up to like a conclusion here to try and figure out, for the last big fight. And then all of a sudden, the player gets teleported. I'm not going to break that. I could have broken the rules if I wanted to as a DM, but
let them have their fun. Let them have their fun.
Let the chaos, appear. And so all of a sudden I'm like, okay, well, what's a crazy place that they go to? Okay, the Shadowfell. Let's just do the Shadowfell. And I'm like, okay. And I'm like, I'd love to be able to have a quick descriptive for my player to try and figure out exactly what they see around them, because they have no idea where they end up. So. Right. I do a quick, and as they're discussing the battle and everything, I go to ChatGPT real quick and I say, hey, I have a player that just, in my Dungeons & Dragons campaign that got hit by a prismatic ray and got teleported to another plane. That's the Shadowfell. Can you give me a quick descriptive of what is around them as a potential, side quest, basically, type of thing? And it gave me this massive description of what the player saw around them, including a looming castle in the distance. And it gave me a whole descriptive little story that I gave to him. And then ChatGPT also, I'm like, it gave me like three different ideas for like the adventure to continue on from that.
That's cool.
For the players. Now, could I have come up with that? I probably could have. I could have come up with something like that. It would have taken hours. In the heat of the moment. It would have taken hours and hours for me to try and come up with different ideas and how to expand on that. But then I have this tool that gave me some ideas. Now I can build off of that. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, because I can build off of ideas. That's perfectly fine. Coming up with them sometimes I'm not that great with right off the bat.
Especially names. I have a hard time trying to come up with a name off the fly.
Oh, absolutely. Same thing.
Someone's like, I want to talk to that goblin at the bar. And you're like, oh, crap, what is that? What's a goblin name?
I did the same thing. they had to resurrect one of my players that died in a battle, and they took him to the Temple of Hor in Mirabar, and they want to go talk to the priest. For the Temple of Hor, I need the name for the Temple of Hor and Mirabar, and I need the head cleric of it. And he spit out this very dwarvish name, and gave me a full description, a body description of him, what they saw, the description of the temple, and I was able to just kind of spit it off to my players, and they were just, they were sucked right in, and it was immersed. So I don't think it's cheating. It's a tool.
Do you think you could ever see the role of a dungeon master be taken over by AI?
It's already been done. They do it. People do it right now.
Interesting.
Some people, when there's only like two people, they'll use AI as the dungeon master for an adventure.
Oh, interesting.
Like if there's not enough players, people can do that. You can just do it by yourself if you want to.
Right. It's essentially just typing in the prompts into Gemini or ChatGPT. Right?
Exactly. Basically starting it off, I want to do a solo campaign by myself for Dungeons & Dragons.
But I think a part of what makes Dungeons & Dragons so special is, being able to play with your friends.
Absolutely.
You know?
Absolutely.
I don't know if I could do a full campaign with an AI Dungeon Master, even if I'm playing with Mike and Dennis.
Oh, absolutely. You know? I wouldn't recommend it either. It's an availability, like, because there's some people in the world out there that don't have that capability of having the friends around.
That's a big hurdle for getting into Dungeons and Dragons, mm-hmm. is people don't have friends who play, mm-hmm. and getting a group can be very hard, mm-hmm. because then you have to learn an overwhelming game that seems like it has 1,000,000,000 rules. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
And it seems very overwhelming. The barrier to entry in Dungeons and Dragons is high, but definitely not as high as it was back in the day.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Now you can look at YouTube resources and figure out how to play a game in like 5 minutes.
Yeah, easily, without a problem.
Yep.
It's an ever expanding world, and I'm just looking for, they're putting out just a lot of great stories, a lot of great content, and the community itself is putting out a lot of great stuff. I'm excited to find out where it continues to go from there too. So
yeah. And do you have any plans of like getting other D&D elements into the NAH Outpost at all?
But right now, we're just... I've kind of slowed down on expanding out, because like I said, I don't want to go too crazy. I don't want to, you know...
You want to stay in your lane with miniatures.
Exactly. It's a great little niche that I have. It does very, very well. And like I've explored it. We've kind of done some more D&D accessories. Like I've done the coasters with the laser, done the keychains, a couple other miscellaneous things. One thing I kind of, my dad's retired, so one thing that I kind of wanted to have fun with was, you know, the creme de la creme was the Wormwood dice boxes and such. I'm like, okay, yeah. I'd love to be able to do a kind of a variation of that on my own. And so we kind of explored that idea a bit, and we actually ended up buying a whole CNC machine where my dad has just been having some fun, you know, because my dad's retired, he's a woodworker, he's just has some fun. And now he's making dice boxes now. We have like 3 different variations of dice boxes that we've been, every year we've actually, since we started them like last year, we've pretty much sold out of them at the conventions that people just go crazy for. Because, you know, especially when you buy online, it's kind of hard to tell because you don't know what you're going to end up getting.
Mm-hmm.
But if you have them right there in person in front of you, you get to see them, you get to look at them. We do like these gorgeous hardwood dice boxes of just the more basic ones and some more exotic ones. We have cherry, cedar, walnut, padauk, purple heart, and Bolivian rosewood. Some obviously some more of the exotic ones. They're just fantastic. And we end up, you know, running them out. We have especially our large boxes where they fit 3 to 4 sets of dice. You have room for a miniature, and we give you a rolling area on the top part of the box.
Nice.
And they're all lined with the leather with true leather.
And your dad's just making them?
He's kind of making the boxes, and then I'm kind of finishing off. I'm able to cut the leather with the laser, and then I kind of finish them off. And he's just having a blast doing it. It's giving him something to do.
Yeah.
Do
you only sell those? Oh, you sell those online too?
I do sell those online. We only have the standard hex boxes right now online. I've not just life in general gets crazy, and I've just not been able to put the larger boxes up yet, but we do have the larger boxes ready. There's going to be some at, I don't know when this is going to be airing, but at Retro.
This will be airing, hold on here, the 10th, so next Friday.
Next Friday, okay, yeah. So if you're listening,
Retro
GameCon Junior, right? Which is happening on Saturday? I think it's, yeah, Saturday, because Mother's Day is Sunday. So Saturday, we're going to have a huge selection of our dice boxes available at Retro GameCon Jr.
Nice.
A ton of them available.
You put your dad to work to really stock up on those dice boxes.
We've stocked up on quite a bit of them, so it's been a lot of fun kind of preparing that.
What is the best-selling thing in your whole store?
Probably these mystery miniature boxes.
Really?
These mystery people.
There's not a specific model that's like your top best-selling?
Not necessarily.
Everyone likes those miniature
boxes. There's a ton of miniatures that people love buying. Probably one of the more popular ones is actually that spider merchant you were talking about earlier. That's a huge one. And that's been a lot of struggles for me, is to try and find the right names. Because these artists kind of just put out names. You can't use trademark names. Like, you can't use a Beholder. Because mm-hmm. Beholder is owned by Dungeons & Dragons and Hasbro and everything.
Octopus thing.
Yeah. we call it an Eye Holder. There's a bunch of different names that we have for them. I'm an Abomination Crime Lord. But there's a whole bunch of different names. But we kind of, you know, we walk a fine line, but we want to make sure that
You don't step on any toes.
Don't step on any toes, yeah. But also create searchable names for creatures that people can find on our shop.
Right. So don't go looking for an owl bear. Go looking for a bear owl.
No, owl bear is not trademarked.
Oh, okay.
I don't, I hope it's not. But we do have, but we have a bunch of versions of that on our shop that are phenomenal. But yeah, by far the mystery miniature boxes are best sellers because just like for the longest time, you know, going back to the days of Magic the Gathering, you know, you don't know
what you're going to get.
Yeah. It's not that expensive. You don't know what you're going to end up getting out of a card pack. You spend, you know, $3-4 on a card pack.
Yep.
You open it up. Okay. Next thing you know, you're buying a $140 box of Magic the Gathering trading cards to find out what you're going to end up getting. You know, what's the, you know, a big thing in, you know, you go to Walmart, you get like the mystery bags of like, what are you going to get? Like this little Pokemon puzzle or a little Minecraft creature.
Right.
It's a, you know.
Like a deck.
It's a little, you just like little figurines. You don't know what you're going to get. People love a mystery
because
you don't know what you're going to end up getting.
Yeah, it's exciting too. Especially when it's like I'm going through and I'm opening, I'm like, oh my God, Spider merchant, and then I open the next one. I'm like, a demon dog. That is so cool. You never know what to expect when you're going.
You have no idea what you're going to end up getting out of it, and so that's probably why it's our biggest seller. Especially when if you buy enough boxes, or if there's like a length of time, you could end up getting one of your duplicates. But it's
chances are slim when you're going. How many slim, different models?
600, about 600 different models.
Yeah.
So it all depends on what I put into a box.
Have you ever thought about doing like a set, like if you're going to run the Lost Mines of Phandalver, here's a miniature set that we can print and ship to you.
We have thought about doing that. I've created listings for that. I've started the process of doing that. I don't really have a reason why I have not done it yet.
It's probably at the end of the day, there's a lot of campaigns.
There's a lot.
But if you put them like in sets and tie to the campaign, I don't know. I would love to be like, now I know I always have everything I need for the Lost Mines of Phandalver.
I've created those things, and I've created spreadsheets. I've created a whole listing of the different models that I would need to be able to do so for like, I want to run the entire, you know, chapter one or chapter two, chapter three, or I want to run the entire, because you got those people out there that, you know, they're fortunate, they have the money, where they're just like, all right, I want to have just every miniature I need to run this campaign and not have to worry about it whatsoever.
Right.
And we've created those listings, and I've kind of gotten prepared to do that. I've just not fully executed on them yet.
You'll get there when you're ready. Your plate's full. I got a lot going on.
I have, like, the amount of, like, because, like I said, every month I get more miniatures to be able to put in my shop.
Mm-hmm.
But I've been so overwhelmed with life in general, with kids, with trying to expand on making sure that I'm on different marketplaces. I'm finally catching up, but I'm probably like a year and a half behind on models. I have thousands of models I can still put up in the shop.
Wow.
But it's a matter of creating those listings. And
takes time, and especially when they're miniatures. It's a lot of work.
Because on our listings, one thing I try and make sure of is that on those listings are the size of the miniatures. They're correct. Like because you got people out there that, again, this is another struggle of the business. You got the scales. You got the people out there that, like, I want things in 28-millimeter scale. I want things in 30-millimeter, 32-millimeter scales. What I found is the majority of people don't care. They just want something cool
to play
on the table.
Yeah.
So I've made it simpler. I've attempted to make it simpler for people out there. I've basically made it so there's a model that's a small model, a medium model, a large model, and a huge model, gargantuan. So basically, you know, 1 inch, 2 inch, 3 inch, 4 inch type model. Yeah. I tried making it easier. And then if people are like, well, I'm not really sure on how big that is, I make sure in all of my descriptions for all of my miniatures, the sizings are listed.
So people know.
So they know exactly what they're getting to try and help guide them a little bit more. But for the most part, people don't care for the scaling. They just want something cool for their tabletop that's not wonky. Mm-hmm. So,
sidebar, what time do you have to leave?
I have to be...
in Maddiedale at 11?
Yeah, 11 o'clock. So
So we can stick the landing here soon. Now, going back to what you were saying before, when you are, like, printing these, How many printers do you have running?
Right now, we have currently 6 printers in operation right now.
Are they in one room?
They're all, yeah.
Does the room get super hot with all the machines around? No,
not at all. I actually run everything out of, we have a kind of a finished basement, a partially finished basement where I kind of run everything out of.
Nice.
And that's literally taken, my entire workshop is now just in our larger basement that we have kind of.
Well, there's actually heat. You know, in your garage, there's no heat out there. So, you know.
In the winter, it can get a little bit chillier. Yeah. But especially working during the summer, it's so nice working in my basement in the summer. But it's nice and cool. But especially during.
I need temperature controls.
I have everything temperature control. Each printer has their own. There's actually, in each printer that I have set up, there is a chicken incubator heater in every single printer to make sure it stays at 30°C for all of them.
Wow.
To make sure that, especially during the winter, that they stay warm enough. But in the summer, they really don't run much at all because it's
already cool down there.
Or if it does, they need to run only a little bit because it's already cool in the basement. So I'm able to keep things consistent because that's one thing about running a business like this. You want to put out a high quality, consistent product.
Yeah.
If you're not doing that, then you're not going to get return customers. And that's one of our biggest things right now is return customers. People buy our miniatures. We have over like 6,000 reviews on Etsy, and all of them, we still remain a 5-star business because of the pride that I take in what I get, and I want to make sure that, customer service is the number one priority. That's why I want to kind of keep us at the level we're at. I'm happy with where we are. I'm able to produce, like I said, the mystery miniatures, I'm able to produce the 600 miniatures in a weekend if I need to.
Wow.
I'm able to print them out extremely quickly.
Box them up and then get them done. And you have them ready for the next show.
Ready to go, exactly.
Nice. Dude, this is really cool. Thanks for giving me one of these boxes. I got
I have a whole stack ready to go for the conventions.
Yeah.
So I just picked up one of the boxes. So
they're all individually wrapped, too. Dude,
talked about a Hellhound.
Right.
Is that the
different one.
Ah, it's a different one. Okay,
that's what I'm saying, dude. And they're all been, they all look so comical. Different. That would have been really funny.
The detail I'm still just so proud of, making sure the models are amazing.
Wow.
That's like a
dragon monk.
Yeah, it's like a dragon. I think this is like a more of a dragonborn, sorcerer type thing. And again, I want to make this is a perfect example of the flexibility. I want to make sure these can be flexible if they need to make sure they're not going to be, they're not going to, because if you're using a brittle resin, parts like that or parts of like this tail here are going to just snap off. So I got a hag there. Nice.
I was just saying the other day, I don't have a good hag in my collection here.
That's
a cool metal construct.
Yep.
Oh, a dinosaur.
Oh, Blaster. Yeah, a good Blaster Raptor.
Raptor.
Yeah.
Dude, so 5 miniatures, all completely different. Unique.
Some people get a little bit upset, like you, and like, I wish there was like a theme to the mystery miniatures. Like, that's kind of harder to do, unfortunately, the amount that I do. But I just want to be able to give. Some people buy these just to give them an idea for different things for their campaigns.
Yeah.
Like, okay, all of a sudden I have, I have a Hellhound, I have a Construct, I have a Hag, I have a Velociraptor. I could build, especially I can build an entire section off of a Hag or, this Dragonborn Sorcerer. This could be a little construct that, they find that it becomes a little small companion for one of their allies.
And also, I want to give you your props because when we did our Dungeons and Donations and I played the hippo.
Yep.
And Dennis was trying to find a miniature, and he was not having luck because he wanted to give us our miniatures of our characters. And you were able to just find one and get one done up for him so quickly. So respect that.
I got
that still sitting there. I haven't had the, because I'm like still new to painting, and that Mr. Dimples is very important to me. So I don't want to paint him and mess him up. Do you know what I mean? So I have him unpainted on my desk.
Mm-hmm.
So thank you for doing that. And thank you for doing this podcast. This is great.
Happy to do it. It's like I said, Dungeons and Dragons has been my life for the past 5 years and just very prideful in what we've done. And I just love the entire community and what it's done. And again, being able to keep my, reaching out to friends that you've not been able to talk to for a while, and all of a sudden there you are. You're back together again, tight knit, and you're able to hang out and talk. And it's just been, I just love what it's done, and also just be able to help the community. It's been fantastic.
I love what you've done too. Is there anything else that you want to plug before we wrap up?
If you again, like I said, if you would like, go to our shop at NAH Outpost, which we didn't discuss the origins of that, but NAHOutpost.com. And
yeah, we didn't even touch on the name. Yeah.
Well, that's, we'll touch on that just briefly. So originally when we started with the stitch markers, going back to then, we started doing miniatures too. I'm like, okay, what's a fun name? Oh, this is a business that my wife and I were running. Well, this is kind of nerdy. And then, okay, what can we play off of, like crochet? That'd be fun. Oh, let's be a little bit edgy and go Nerd in the Hooker. You know, hooker because of crochet hook. So that's what our business name was originally called. We even got it originally officially registered with New York State for an LLC as the Nerd and the Hooker.
Whoa, and they let that so oh, fun. Yeah, they let,
because we had to explain it to them.
Because like, the crocheting. Okay,
cool. Yeah, and then because they were a little bit like, are you sure about that? And but it was eye-catchy. It was very edgy and kind of and it hilarious. Drew people in. It was hilarious. It was just a lot of fun. And as we kind of explored and we kind of started doing business with a lot more official nature, we were doing a lot more dealings with companies and public. We're like, all right, maybe we should just kind of church this up a little bit and kind of clean it up. So that's when we decided, like, okay, NAH Outpost. Okay, Outpost is kind of like, you know, in Dungeons & Dragons, you'd go to, like, an outpost to try and find all kinds of different miscellaneous wares and all kinds of knickknacks and kind of cool things. So we did NAH for Nerd and the Hooker.
Yeah.
NAH and then Outpost.com. So
Now it's the NAH Outpost. That's awesome.
Yeah, we found that the names really didn't matter for... Like, you have, like, different companies out there that, you know, that say, you know, we're something gaming or whatever, that try and drive, you know, as an identifier of what they actually make. But then there's companies out there that have names that have absolutely nothing to do with their company, with what they produce, that it doesn't matter. It's just people know your name.
Yep.
And our business has grown off of that and without an issue.
If your brand is strong enough, no one really cares.
Yeah, no one cares. You're recognizable. So, again, NAHOutpost.com. If you come to if you buy anything from our website directly, you automatically get 15% off.
Oh, okay.
Because a lot of the marketplaces and such, they take their own fees and everything. They take their own fees. They want, you know, they have to take, which it's a marketplace, and I respect that. They, you know, they have
they got to make things.
They got to make their end, and yep. I get that. So, essentially, it would we would end up making more money off of our own website, but we want to make sure our customers get a great deal if they go just directly to us. So we're still making about the same money, but if we're able to drive them to our store and save our customers some money too, they automatically get 15% off at our shop. So.
Nice. No promo code needed.
No promo code. You'll write it when you go to checkout. You just add whatever you want, and you're good to go. And pretty much anything over $35 for an order is free shipping.
It's amazing. So. Okay, cool. And I'll put all the links in the show notes below. So this way they can find you on Instagram, on your website, and I'll even put any other links that you want to share. Just send to me and we'll put them in there.
Absolutely. Sounds like a plan.
Thanks, man. Appreciate you doing this.
I appreciate it.